After 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, which will launch an RN to BCN program in January. Practicing nurses with an associate degree can complete a Bachelor of Science in Nursing in 16 months, taking a mix of online and on-campus courses. Go to carthage.edu/BSN. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. The interview that was originally scheduled to air today with Holly Stanfield from the Kenosha Unified School District has been postponed. We hope that we will be able to bring you a conversation with Holly sometime next week. In its place, part one of today's program is with Jack Rose with the National Alliance for Mental Illness. In parts two and three of today's program, we're going to be telling you about two marvelous books for young readers that have just come from National Geographic, including one by Sonia Manzano, longtime cast member in the character of Marie in the cast of Sesame Street. Here's part one of today's program. We are going to be observing Mental Health Awareness Week with Jack Rose, who is president of the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And Jack Rose, of course, has joined us any number of times over the years to talk about this very important issue and concern. And this particular conversation, of course, comes during this time of the COVID-19 pandemic. And so there are some important matters to talk about in terms of the impact of COVID on mental health and some of the challenges that are part of this current situation. And of course, we also are talking about mental health in light of some of what Mayor John Antaramian has talked about in terms of the city of Kenosha moving forward in the wake of recent difficult events, and how treatment for mental illness is one of the issues that needs to be more widely and comprehensively and effectively addressed. So there's quite a lot to talk about. So Jack Rose, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you very much, Greg. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Let's begin with COVID and the fact that I think a fair number of people have probably already heard at least a little bit about some of the ways in which what we have experienced during this pandemic and the restrictions on our lives and the fears and stresses that are part of all of this have taken a toll, and including a toll on those who were right from the start perhaps a bit fragile in terms of their own mental and emotional health. What can you tell us about what we know in terms of the impact of this pandemic on the mental health of all of us, but in particular those for whom mental illness might have already been an issue or concern?
Right. Well, I think it's been absolutely a huge impact. And you can look at some of the programs that we have here with NAMI Kenosha County. And due to the COVID restrictions, we can't really do what we're supposed to do. We have utilized the Zoom virtual contact, that particular venue, to try to keep moving along, but it's it's still an issue. We have had our crisis intervention training, our five-day course for police officers that we've started here in 2010. So far, we've had over 288 law enforcement go through that. We had a class scheduled for September 21st through 25th. That had to be canceled because you just can't do all the required training in the virtual mode. And it's had a huge impact. We also have our crisis intervention partner training, which is a two-day spinoff from the CIT training. We've had that since 2010, and we've trained over 1,015 folks in CIP training, and that we had a session coming up here in October near the end of the month. That has been canceled, again, because we can't just do it the way it needs to be done. Right now, we are utilizing a virtual support group via NAMI Racine, and that has worked out well. But we are trying to continue some of the things that we have been able to do. We've had our walkabout rewards program, something that, I don't know, we started back in 2010. And it's 30 sessions of documented walking. And they were a little bit delayed in start, but at least we'll have about 15 sessions. People complete the walking. And they will be fitted with a new pair of shoes. Compliments of Chuck Gustafson out at Rogan Shoe Store in the interstate. Because the whole thing with mental health and overall wellness, there's really a bond there. We're all different, and yet people living with mental illness have a life expectancy of 25 years shorter than people without. So it's extremely important to get the overall wellness going. So we've tried to do that with the Walkabout Rewards. We also have our NAMI YMCA program, which is starting to move out again with the Y opening. And there we've had, I don't know, 450 people go through a program that started probably back in, 2016. And it's really blossomed, and it started as four or five people with their caseworker going to the Y and maybe shooting hoops or maybe walking around the gym, and it has progressed to now over 450, and people can go independently. It's on a bus line, and it adds to their recovery. So it's extremely important. And with the opening of the Y again, that continues. And then our newest wellness program has been our Ride About Rewards. Started in 2018. And here we work with Bridges Community Center. And long story short, we provide bicycles. And the bicycles so far have been bicycles that we've gathered through Kenosha Police Department, through Parkside Police Department, and they are repaired and then provided to some members of Bridges, along with a helmet and a light and a certificate that has them registered. So this has been very effective. And so these are the things that we have been able to do. But many of our support, our family-to-family program, which has been one of our cornerstones, this goes way back to probably 2000. And it's a course, I think it's down to 10 weeks now, where family members of those living with mental illness or spouses go to this course, and they learn more about mental illness. And we started one course out at the County Center building at the beginning of this year. And after about three sessions, we've had to cancel it with COVID. But the facilitators are keeping in contact with some of the folks that, that came to these initial sessions. So we're trying to keep in contact. And it's so important that we maintain this communication link. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Have you heard much in terms of what people who are, have mental health issues have been kind of dealing with? I mean, in terms of this time of COVID, in are there particular ways in which the mentally ill tend to be affected by this kind of situation?
Well, I think one of the big things is try to get socialization. That's one of the big things of Bridges Community Center. And if you cannot get that, you more self-isolate. And this is not a good thing. And so I think we're seeing that I've heard as many as a third of the young folks going off to college are experiencing some kind of anxiety or depression. I mean, this is not a good start for your college career. And so that would have an impact. I think one thing recently with our social unrest and all we've been through here, our Crisis Prevention Center, which is a beautiful location down on 60th Street, it's a project between the city and the county that opened, I think, in 2016. And it's just a crisis prevention center. It's also a care center. And they moved from a vintage Civil War building down on 5th and 60th down to a 10,000 square foot building on 60th Street. Well, during the riots that evening on the 23rd, the probation and parole office was completely destroyed right next to the crisis prevention center. And now you've got people that are in crisis in the center, and they had to shut the facility down from the 24th of August until September 15th. And thank God for Racine Sale, which is another residential area, residential service in Racine, that some of our people that were there residing could go there. And then we transferred the crisis portion to the new headquarters for Kenosha Human Development Services. And that's over on 3536 52nd Street. And that's another good example of city, county working together, but that was huge impact right here in Kenosha on people living with a mental illness.
Hmm. We're speaking with Jack Rose, who is president of the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. This is Mental Illness Awareness Week, hence this conversation which we are having. Jack Rose, I'm sure you were interested, as many people were, when Mayor John Antaramian, in the wake of recent events here in Kenosha, listed mental health and the way in which people with mental illness are served by our community as one of the pressing issues that needs attention as Kenosha moves forward. Have you been in direct conversation at this point with the mayor or anyone in his office, or do you have any sense of the kind of concerns or issues that he is specifically referring to?
Yes, I have. And I've talked to the mayor directly on it. And if I may, I'll put on my city council hat. I'm currently the alderperson of the 15th district here. So I think it's extremely important now that the city do what we can do to raise the bar. We've had examples of good coordination city-county with the Crisis Prevention Center, with the new home for Kenosha Human Development Services, and we need to continue this. Because as everybody knows, the mental health budget, that all lies with Human Services of Kenosha County. So right now it's prime time. Kenosha County is getting ready to put its budget together. And as I've done, I don't know, for many years now, I will do my best to advocate for the mental health AODA portion of that budget. And it is so very, very critical. And I think it's a great opportunity for the city and the county to pull on the line together and see what we can do to make our mental health awareness and our mental health treatment better. I think right now we have an outstanding network in the community. And we work together and with Kenosha Human Development Services and the Crisis Prevention Center and Comprehensive Community Services and Community Support Program. They're out there, and we're helping people that need it, and we need to continue doing that. I think another key player in this is the Kenosha Community Health Center, and they have been in the city for a long time, and I think we need to do, or they need to do a better job in providing the resource that they are capable of providing our city. And so I've had a discussion with Joe Clark, who is the current president of the board for Kenosha Community Health Center, and I think now is a time for that entity to also rise up. And I think that this is, it's a great opportunity, and we need to capitalize on it, and it is such a key piece of rebuilding our community and getting everybody pulling on the line together. And as you know, and I've been on this your show many, many years, I have been an advocate of mental health for a lot of years. And sometimes it takes a situation such as we find ourselves right now to get the necessary players at the table, and it takes some action to make it better. I think one of the other things that we are short on, and that is inpatient psychiatric beds. We have talked about this for years and years. We lost our in-city building when they stopped in 2002 at Old St. Catherine's on the north side of town. We have reached out. Advocate Aurora. Right now, most recently, we had a meeting with Rogers Behavioral. They've had a couple of sessions over the last few years where they bring together the stakeholders. And our comment is we need an inpatient facility. And this for many reasons. We had an opportunity with Lake Behavioral in Waukegan back at the end of last year where they were looking at some empty floors at Frederick South downtown. And we had an opportunity back in October where they were going to bring their CEO and one of their designers, architects, to take a look at Frederick South downtown, to look at what could be done with the idea of we will rent it, we will fix it, we will staff it. And we were turned down completely by Frederick South. So we will keep advocating for this. And as I said, we met Andy Berg from the county board, and I met with Janet Gatlin and some of the staff from Rogers Behavioral last week, I guess it was. And so we'll see maybe what they can bring. But we need to keep doing this because it's not only for the benefit of the patient, it's not only for the benefit of the cost, the patient's family, and we need it.
So what is the reason for the resistance? I mean, is this simply a matter of money? And if so, in what way does money play into the reluctance of a healthcare organization to want to try to offer this to the community?
I think it is money, my personal opinion. I think a while back they tried to do a geropsych ward at Kenosha Freighted South, and that, in their words, was cost prohibitive. I think there is another factor that in order to have the, you know, you need a lot more than building, but there is a severe shortage of psychiatrists, trained professionals in the mental health field. And I think that that is also a shortfall. 2 points on that. Kenosha Community Health Center, they have a much wider net of potential healthcare workers, psychiatric healthcare workers, and also they have a huge loan forgiveness program. So that's one avenue there. I think, again, one of the things that we're trying to do here in Kenosha, it's a longer process, but we have we try to grow our own, and we're doing that right now. And we have Dominic Pritchett, who is born and raised and on her own now. She's out there, and she's currently the CEO, owner, and clinical director of Beloved Wellness Center right here in Kenosha. We have another person, Jason Free, who is a nurse working for Kenosha Human Development Services. He is currently a student, virtual, while he's still working his full workday, a virtual student at University of Tennessee, Knoxville. He will be graduating in June of 2021 as an advanced practice nurse practitioner, and he will be staying in the community to work. This is very important, and we need to continue this, and we need the professionals, and we need the facility. I think for the longest time we were spoiled with St. Luke's or Ascension in Racine that had 40 beds. That was easy. That was relatively easy. They had 40 beds. They had 10 PIC units, which is like intensive care for people with mental health issues. And now I think they're down to maybe 10 beds, maybe less. And so that has prompted anybody that needs a locked facility for longer distance travel. Many times if it's a 911 call or an emergency detention, a Chapter 51, those people may end up at Winnebago. And so if you look at the transport for that, KPD, you're probably taking two officers, an entire shift just to get the person from Kenosha up to Winnebago. And the sheriffs, they have the same kind of additional expense. So if we can cut into that and make the transit less, I mean, it's going to save some money. I don't know. We had a thing when the Kenosha Crisis Center First Ocean opened, Crisis Prevention Center. We had some people that needed to go to a locked facility, and they couldn't. They didn't have any beds, so they used a couple of extra beds right here in town to maintain those people until beds opened, and it saved, I don't know, $40,000 in a period of months. So monies can be saved by having it close in Kenosha. And also it's better for the patient and the family. And I think not everybody needs a locked facility. And we're doing more and more with different types of wellness training. But if they do need a locked facility, it's much better to have that facility closer and not so distant. I think, I don't know, that's maybe a long-winded answer. I hope I hit your point.
Right. You did. And it brings up the matter that part of probably what needs to happen is that certain systems need to be changed in order to facilitate healthcare organizations being able to provide this kind of care. And I know that one of the most important things that NAMI does is to advocate on behalf of these kind of concerns when it comes to cities and counties and states putting together their budgets and in sort of putting together the laws that govern us, making sure that the laws are in place that do not make it even more difficult to provide this kind of crucial care. In our last couple of minutes, can you just say a word about this facet of what NAMI does?
Well, I think it's important. I mean, we go out and we talk. We attend the various county meetings promoting the human services budget, which is so key. Right now, we haven't really done much yet, but they have Lake Behavioral Hospital, Waukegan. And this is the institution that came up and wanted to take a look at Frederick South. Well, they're close. They just opened a 146-bed facility, I believe, in Waukegan. It's a for-profit mental health hospital. They've been doing it. And so right now, our folks from Kenosha can go down to Lake voluntarily, but if you'd get in a situation where you need to have an involuntary admission, now you're talking about going from Wisconsin to Illinois, and that requires a change in the state law. And right now, Illinois has a similar agreement with Iowa. So looking at it, you know, from the county level, from the state level, that would be something we could address, because here is a relatively close asset that could be a big assistance to our community. Mm.
If people want more information about NAMI, what it offers, and also want more information about ways in which they can somehow be of help or support what you do, where should they go for that information?
Okay, what you want to do is go to NAMIKenosha.org, okay? And we have a fantastic website, and it's got a tremendous amount of information. So that's the place to go right now. And then you can also contact us at 262-652-3606. And one thing with COVID and what we're going through right now, our numbers of calls that we get on that number, 652-3606, is increasing. So we're here to help, and let us know how we can do that. And thanks very much for the opportunity, Greg.
Jack Rose is the president of the Kenosha County chapter of NAMI. Jack Rose, thank you for being here, and thanks for all the good work that you're doing on behalf of this important issue. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Part two is coming up in just a moment. And I am so grateful to be able to have a few minutes to speak with Sonia Manzano, who is beloved to many for her part of Sesame Street for many years, with the beloved character Maria, but also the author of a number of wonderful books, including a memoir, Becoming Maria, Love and Chaos in the South Bronx. Her most recent book, her first book for National Geographic, is called A World Together. And this is a book that the world really needs. And it is a beautiful exploration of just what makes our world so beautiful and rich, and how in our diversity we find layers of beauty that we would otherwise never be able to see. And we have a couple of minutes to speak with Sonia Manzano about what inspired her to write this book, A World Together. Sonia Manzano, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Well, thank you so much. My pleasure to talk about the book. I jumped at the chance when National Geographic asked me to write a book about diversity, seeing as a state we find the world in today, and especially our country. I'm especially chagrined of the state of affairs, since I thought that Sesame Street had sort of solved all those problems in 1969 and the result of the civil rights movement and the idealism of President Johnson when he wanted to create the Great Society way back in the 70s. So if there's one thing I've learned, it's that just because you address a problem in one generation doesn't mean it's going to spill over into the coming generation. Mm. So it was time for a good book about sharing all the ways that we are the same, in that we feel sad and we feel happy and we all want shelter and we all feel hungry and we all are satisfied when we eat something good, are all the ways that we're the same part of the human condition. The only ways we're different is culturally, and those are the cultural things we should celebrate.
Mm. So explain to our listeners what they find in the pages of this book, both in your words, your lovingly crafted words, but also in the splendid visuals that are also part of this book.
Yes, Lori Epstein, the photo editor at National Geographic, did a smashing, wonderful job of showing all kinds of kids in all kinds of situations. I wanted some urban images, and she complied by having that wonderful image of the kids playing by a fire hydrant, because that was kind of my experience as a kid growing up in the Bronx. And I was also interested in not shying away from showing a sad image, and we have a picture of a looks like a soldier kissing his child goodbye, and the words that go with it say, "And when people feel scared, they sometimes forget that deep down we're all the same." Mm. And I suppose I'm reacting to the fact that I see so much anger out there, more than I thought people felt, but clearly they do, and that must come out of fear, and we forget that we're the same, and that picture coupled with those words might inspire conversations in that direction or not, or someone will just say, well, that's like just a sad picture and leave it at that. So I hope it is a book that starts when you close the last page.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it is that keeps some people from embracing and celebrating this notion of our diversity? What is it that makes that, to some people, an idea that they just don't warm up to, and maybe even feel even kind of repelled by or afraid of? What are people afraid of when it comes to diversity?
I don't know why people are afraid. I honestly don't, and I was struck by a quote. I want to say it was Carrie Mae Weems, but I don't know if she said that, an African-American artist. If it wasn't her, I apologize, but who said, I look in the mirror, but I don't see. What is so frightening? And those words stay with me. And, you know, I do a voice on an animated show for Nickelodeon where I play a Mexican grandmother. Now, it's very funny. I enjoy myself because they keep correcting my Puerto Rican Spanish. It's a little different. It's a little different. And the foods, you know, I'll have to pronounce foods that begin with the letter X. And I don't know how to pronounce them. So they'll help me with the pronunciation. But that doesn't frighten me that they're different. I enjoy it. It doesn't frighten me when I read Sherman Alexie books and I learn about Native American experience. It's curious. It's different from mine. It's when I read about a poor child on a reservation. I was a poor child in the Bronx, but they're very different experiences. And I'm curious about it, not frightened. Hmm. I don't know why some people find any change in anyone's lifestyle or behavior so frightening. I'm at a loss.
In the last 20 seconds, what did you learn from all of your work on Sesame Street that helped you understand and appreciate diversity?
Humor. Humor will go very, very far. People will laugh at the same things. And I think that's why Sesame Street is such a success worldwide, because people will have a sense of humor and usually find the same things universally humorous.
Funny how laughter opens up the heart. And I love your book, A World Together, published by National Geographic. Sonia Manzano, thank you for giving it to the world.
Thank you so much. Stay well.
I hold in my hands one of the latest books to come from the good people at National Geographic. And this book is something extra special, and I am very, very happy that we can talk about it. It's called Girls Can: Smash Stereotypes, Defy Expectations, and Make History. This is a book definitely intended for young readers, but just about anybody will derive great inspiration from exploring this book, in which we learn about all kinds of extraordinary women through the course of history who have made an enormous difference in the world in all kinds of different arenas. And the book is beautiful to look at and endlessly fascinating. One of the people responsible for it is a writer and poet by the name of Paige Towler, who has a long history with National Geographic, a book editor there for National Geographic Kids for 5 years. And her work has appeared in such anthologies as Hey Baby and the National Geographic Book of Nature. And this book, again, is titled Girls Can. And Paige Towler, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg. So glad to be here.
I'm glad we can be having this conversation. The book is so inspiring, and it's not only inspiring to read, but I'm sure it would be tremendously inspiring to write. Tell us a little bit about the creative process by which this book came together and the precise role that you played in the crafting of this book.
Absolutely. So I am one of three authors on this book. I worked with Marissa Sebastian and Tora Shea Pruden, both fantastic women. And I really can't emphasize enough how much of a group effort this was, not just from the three of us, but also from the designers and photo editors and fact checkers and regular editors, or rather, I mean, text editors, and also people at other divisions at National Geographic. We were lucky enough to work with people who could help us profile some of the amazing National Geographic explorers who are actually out in the field making huge changes for the environment. And we were lucky to work with the adult book team who put out books for a mature audience, and work with them in getting some interviews with amazing people like Oprah, Roxane Gay, and more.
I think one of the things that is intriguing to me is that when we read this book, there are all kinds of women whom we have certainly heard of, like Oprah Winfrey and Susan B. Anthony and Madame Curie and so on, but then all kinds of women whose names will not be nearly so well known. And of course, we're talking about a whole planet from which to choose. I mean, this is really this book is global in its scale and wide ranging in terms of its historical span as well. How hard was it to figure out which women to highlight, and what kinds of things did you think about and weigh in making those choices?
Certainly, it was definitely really difficult. I mean, there could be an infinite number of these books, honestly, because the amount of amazing women out there just goes on and on. And you bring up a really wonderful point, which is that we did want to highlight a lot of unknown stories in addition to the more established ones. And that is because we really wanted to prove the point that these things have been happening throughout history. Women have been doing amazing things. And part of the problem is just that their stories aren't being told or highlighted as important. So we were really excited to be able to break it down by time period, by subjects such as sports versus science, and of course to highlight stories from all around the globe and just show an amazing abundance of change and leadership and passion and brilliance from women throughout history.
Why don't you choose a couple of the lesser known women whose stories you think are especially remarkable and whose stories are found in this book?
Absolutely, yes. Two of my, I should say, favorite stories, which of course they're all my favorites, but two that I find particularly inspiring and that I had never heard of were Inhedwana and Edmonia Lewis. Inhedwana actually lived thousands of years ago in the Assyrian Empire, and she is the first known writer. So basically, out of all of history, she is the first author whose name we know. It's not the oldest piece of writing, but she's the first author to have her name on something. And the fact that there's something that monumental, and it's a female author, and I had no idea, really inspired me. We don't know whether Inhedwana was her title or her name, but we do know that she was really kick butt in that she was a priestess. She was responsible for uniting a couple of different groups of people under her visions. And on the side, she actually wrote her own personal poetry. So she was just a great visionary leader and talented poet. And then more recently, Edmonia Lewis was a sculptor in the 1800s. She was born after enslaved people had been freed, and she was born to a freed father and an Ojibwe mother. So she came from a background that was extremely marginalized, and the odds were very stacked against her, not just being a woman, but being a woman of color from two very, very put upon and discriminated against backgrounds. Despite all of that, despite an early upbringing of extreme adversity, she actually became a masterclass sculptor and studied in Italy under the best. And I had seen Edmonia Lewis's works, actually, when I was vacationing, and I thought, you know, this is incredible, but I had no idea about her story. And it's just a testament to not only her natural skill, but this woman's incredible determination to create beautiful art despite the odds being completely stacked against her.
One of the points that recurs through the book is sort of a parade of different myths that for such a long time have held back certain women from achieving all that they might, or held back women from dreaming about possibilities kind of beyond the standard stereotypes and so on. What was it like to kind of think about those important myths and to sort of set them up so they could be in effect dashed as we read your book?
Right. It was, I have to say, honestly, it was surprising and frustrating, but ultimately definitely liberating to dive into a lot of research. The thing about these myths is the surprising and frustrating part is just how frequent they are. You know, if you go online into different forums or sometimes just talking to people, they will bring up myths about women in leadership, myths even about the way women's brains are structured, you know, silly things that are completely outdated but still hold sway over the way people think. So it was definitely a daunting task trying to collect some of the most popular myths for each category and then to dive into different research papers, different published journals, and really find, just in addition to common sense, you know, scientific information that would let us, or of course, at an appropriate kid's age, just dash them to pieces.
We open the book with a chapter devoted to leadership, and this is a wonderful array of women, with people from Cleopatra and Queen Elizabeth I all the way to present-day politicians and CEOs. And then we meet some great adventurers and athletes, some great writers and artists, some great scientists and mathematicians. And then I think the book really ends with a bang with Chapter 5, which is titled Changing the World, which features a succession of really incredible and inspiring women who, in one way or another, have helped to change the world, and people from from the pages of history, like Susan B. Anthony and Sojourner Truth, straight through to the present day. What would be one of the women from this part of the book that you think is especially worth knowing?
Sure. I was really glad to include Sojourner Truth's story. We paired her closely with Susan B. Anthony because Sojourner Truth really shows a glossed over history of women's rights. We idolize Susan B. Anthony, and we all know most people know the amazing and incredible strides she made for getting the vote for women. And we do profile her, but where she fell down really was on intersectionality. So she did not promote rights for Black women. And Sojourner Truth came along and shed a light on so many voices that were being overlooked and really had so much to add to this movement. So we were really excited to be able to look at things from multiple perspectives and sort of pull back the curtain on aspects that may have been glossed over or not taught as much, and tell the story of a woman who just refused to be silenced and refused to be told that she was less than.
There is an intriguing spread towards the very end of the book, which is devoted to boys. Explain what this page is about and why you and your collaborators felt like it was important to take a brief moment for boys.
Absolutely. So, of course, this book is devoted to raising up and empowering women and smashing myths against them. But one of the most important messages to, I think, bring more people to get behind women's empowerment is to really emphasize how it helps everybody. It helps girls, it helps boys, it helps people who don't identify as either. It's really good for society in general, basically. So the idea with this spread was to show that boys don't have to be held back by gender biases or stereotypes, too, and to touch on how these things also can be damaging to boys. For example, I think, you know, everyone's heard the phrase, boys don't cry or boys shouldn't cry. Today, boys are told that they shouldn't like pink. You know, oftentimes men in traditionally, quote-unquote, nurturing positions can be looked down upon, and we wanted to show that that's all ridiculous, basically, and that smashing down gender stereotypes is something that liberates absolutely everyone.
Let's close by giving you a chance to describe what this book looks like visually. It's one of the things that I really appreciate. I mean, for as much substance as there is in the text, the way this book looks is also really important in terms of what I think will be its appeal to young readers.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. We have an incredibly talented team. Our designer, Amanda Larson, really did an amazing job setting this up to look very graphic, I should say. It looks a lot like there are a lot of graffiti elements. It looks like someone's out there, you know, starting a revolution, basically. It's got a lot of brilliant, unexpected, bold colors, and there are a lot of layouts that feature really cute icons and graphics. We also have, of course, as usual for National Geographic, wonderful photos, thanks to our photo editor, Lori Epstein, and some specially commissioned illustrations for the women who, you know, don't actually have historical records of what they visually looked like. Each spread is broken down either to feature two women or one woman, so it's really easy to dive in and dip out. You can read it from front to back. You can start wherever you like. It's just very accessible, very, very beautiful, and really feels like it has a lot of energy and excitement to it.
I completely agree. The book, again, is titled Girls Can, Smash Stereotypes, Defy Expectations, and Make History. A marvelous celebration of women around the world and down through history. The book comes from National Geographic and one of its creators, Paige Towler. Paige Towler, thank you so much. Congratulations to you and your collaborators on giving the world, I think, a really important book. And thank you for being part of The Morning Show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, we'll be hearing about the Kenosha Symphony's concert that they're playing at Kemper Center this Saturday night. Also, the author of a book, How the French Invented.